Chapter 3. The Constitution. The written constitutions may be violated in moments of passion or delusion, wrote Thomas Jefferson in 1802, yet they furnish a text to which those who are watchful may again rally and recall the people. Whether we are yet emerging from our own moment of disorientation after 9/11 is difficult to say. I believe, though, that enough Americans are taking a sober second look at what we have allowed our country to become, especially since that terrible day, that the Constitution may yet reemerge as a document to which the people may be rallied and recalled. In early American history, the Constitution figured heavily in political debate. People wanted to know, and politicians needed to justify, where the various schemes they debated in Congress were authorized in the Constitution. In the 21st century, by contrast, the Constitution is like the elephant at the Tea Party that everyone pretends not to notice. The power of the executive branch, for instance, has expanded far beyond what the framers of the Constitution envisioned. One mechanism that has strengthened it is the executive order, an instrument by which presidents have exerted powers that our Constitution never intended them to have. An executive order is a command issued by the president that enjoys his authority alone, not having been passed by Congress. Executive orders can have legitimate functions. Presidents can carry out their constitutional duties or direct their subordinates by executive order, for instance. But they can also be a source of temptation for ambitious presidents. Am I being redundant? Since they can always try to get away with using them as a substitute for formal legislation that they know they cannot get to pass. He can thereby circumvent the normal constitutional legislative process. Executive orders were rare in the 19th century. For a president to issue even several dozen was unusual. The first 20th century president to serve a full term, Theodore Roosevelt, who served two in fact, issued over 1,000. His distant cousin, Franklin Roosevelt, issued over 3,000. Executive orders continue to serve as a potent weapon in the president's arsenal. Congress has sometimes been complicit in presidential abuses of executive orders, either by giving express sanction to the president's action after the fact or ignoring the abuse of power altogether. This latter course is sometimes pursued when congressmen happen to favor the president's course of action but do not want to have to associate themselves with it, perhaps because it is controversial or politically sensitive. With executive orders, presidents can commit our troops to undeclared wars, destroy industries, or make unprecedented social policy changes. And they remain unaccountable because often these actions occur behind the door of the Oval Office, are distributed without notice, and then executed in stealth. This is a travesty against our constitutional system, and any president worthy of the office would absolutely forswear the use of executive orders, except when he can show express constitutional or statutory authority for his action. Yet another abuse, though, and all the more troubling for being unknown to most Americans, involves the use of something called presidential signing statements. When the president signs a bill into law, he sometimes accompanies the signing with a statement, not necessarily read aloud at the signing ceremony, but inserted into the record all the same. This practice was not unheard of in previous administrations, though it was nearly always employed for ceremonial purposes, to thank supporters, to point out the significance of the legislation, and in pursuit of rhetorical ends of a similar kind. The Bush administration, on the other hand, has very often used the signing statement as a vehicle either for expressing the manner in which the president intends to interpret certain provisions of a law, his interpretation being frequently at odds with the one Congress obviously intended, or for even making clear his intention of not enforcing the provision in question at all. It is not always easy to determine whether the president has followed through on these threats, since they are so often made in areas that the White House shrouds in secrecy. Foreign policy and privacy violations. In 2005, though, the Government Accountability Office gave us a very rough estimate of how many of these threatened refusals to enforce legislative provisions were followed up on. In about one-third of the 19 cases it examined, the provision was not being enforced. Law professor Jonathan Turley was blunt. By using signing statements to this extent, the president becomes a government unto himself.